Well, good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on July 10th, 2023. As meeting is being recorded, the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just to share a few helpful tips for people joining through phone calls, you can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute yourself. And if you go under reactions, click on the hand raise icon that will raise or lower your virtual hands. If you use tools, that would be very helpful because that helps us. Somebody is intending to speak and make comments, it will help us have one speaker at a time. Right now, everyone would be on mute, so I would request everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking. It helps us eliminate any external noise. We do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name and then your comment. It helps the interpreters doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is and anybody who listens to the audio of the meeting afterwards. It's also helpful for them to know who the speaker is at the time. Chair Kaffin, I can read the agenda and then take the roll call of the committee.
Sure, that's fine, in whichever order you think is best.
Right, sure. So I would share my screen and then I would read the agenda out loud. And at this point, I believe my screen is visible. So after I finish reading the agenda, we'll go through the roll call of the committee members. Chair Kaffin would go through the motion of reviewing and approving today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have Catherine Herman to present fare vending machines. At 4:45, we have Anne Delaney and Lauren Odd to present temporary bus shelters. At 5:30, we will briefly discuss Hedinger Award 2023. At 5:45, we will take public comments, if any, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. Now I would stop sharing my screen. Going through the roll calls, I would request any members of the committee to confirm your presence when your name is called. Azar Atura, Danny Spish, Tino Calabia. Mr. Calabia is out of the country. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy. Rico is on the meeting with us.
Rico is here.
Okay, thank you. Tamon Farmer. Mr. Farmer had joined and he had to get off the meeting for a few minutes. He will be rejoining. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Kaffin.
Here.
Yeah. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Muzo.
Present.
Phil Posner.
Present. Anu, I noticed on the agenda the report on the orange, blue, silver line.
Yes.
Was not there anymore. Has that been removed?
That has been, yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I am here.
Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonon. and Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes today's roster. At this point, Chair Catherine, I can just do a friendly reminder for our presenters today. We have wonderful two presentations. I will just request as a reminder for the presenters, visual presentations, please describe them in detail for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. This will be very, very helpful. And anyone looking to make public comments from members of the public, if you're able to put a message in the chat informing me that you would like to make comments during public comment section, or raise your virtual hands at that point, and we will take public comments in the order received. All right, Chair Catherine, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. First, let's review and approve the minutes. Do we have any additions or suggestions to the minutes? Otherwise, do I have a motion from someone to approve the minutes?
This is Anu. Dr. Posner has raised his hand, and so did Rico Dancy. So, Dr. Posner.
Okay, yes, thank you. And the second?
Steve, this is a little out of order, but still talking about the agenda, is there anybody that is going to discuss the shuttle service for the blue, orange, and silver lines? Because that has become a topic of discussion in the media, and it has to do with bus and rail, and I think it's pretty critical that anyone that happens to be on the blue, orange, and silver line and needing the shuttles has some time during the meeting to talk about it. And maybe Carol Perdido-Lopez, who is here, might talk a little bit about that. And they may talk a little bit about that during the shelters. Thank you. And I will second the motion on the minutes.
Thank you, Phil. And thank you, Phil. Okay. Let's review and approve the prior meeting minutes. First, are there any suggestions or additions to the prior meeting minutes? Then may I have a motion, please, to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Rico approves.
Great. Thank you, Marcy. And second?
Thank you. I second. This is Sandy.
Okay. All those in favor? All those not?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. The prior meeting minutes are approved. Thank you. Anu, shall I move the meeting forward now?
Sure. So, has the agenda been approved?
I believe it has. Okay. You're probably right. Phil came in to suggest an addition to it. With the suggested addition by Phil, may I have a motion to approve the minutes? I mean, the agenda.
Rico.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
And any opposed? Okay, Anu, they're approved. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chair Kaplan. Now we will move on to our first topic of discussion, which is fare vending machines. And I believe we have Catherine Herman connected.
Hi, yes, Anu. Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. Did you want to share your screen, or would you like me to do that?
Whatever you think is easier.
Okay. I can share it for you then.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, actually.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Apologies for the delay.
No problem. While Anu's doing that, hi everybody. My name's Katie Herman. I am a project manager on a team called Fair Revenue Systems and Modernization here at Metro. It's a team we're working on some broad changes and upgrades to our fare collection systems throughout the agency. What you see on the screen right now is just our introduction slide. Wanted to take a few minutes today to introduce a new project. We're calling it Next Generation Fare Vending. It's centered around purchasing new fare vending machines for our rail stations. So this is a basic agenda slide. Three topics I'm looking to cover today. We'll start with some background and objectives, move on to discuss the project schedule, and then do a kind of group discussion open forum. So to give you some context about the project, our current fare vending machines are at their end of life. On the slide here, on the left-hand side of the slide, there's an image, and the image shows some of our existing fare vending equipment. So on the very left-hand side, there's a machine. It's the one with the black overlay on the front. This is what we call our add value device. This machine allows customers to add stored value to an existing smart trip card using cash only. The machine on the right of the image with the blue overlay is what we call an express revenue machine. That is our full function fare vending device that allows customers to purchase new smart trip cards or top off existing smart trip cards so they can do stored value, bypasses, and that accepts cash or credit or debit cards. So for those of you who have used our machines, you would know they're very old. The machines were designed in the 1980s. They have a very large footprint. So we're looking at 72 3/8 inches by 47 3/4 inches by 32 1/8 inches, basically the size of a large refrigerator. They feature a non-touch display with very limited functionality. They do not accept EMV, so EuroPay, MasterCard, Visa, chip, or contactless payments. If you're using a card payment, it's the traditional swipe method. They consume a lot of power. They are difficult to move. We receive a number of customer complaints about these machines, mostly in regards to machine malfunctions, like the machine ate my money. They are very difficult to reprogram because they're based off of old technology. It's pretty inflexible when we try to introduce new products because we have limitations on things like text and options. It's also becoming increasingly difficult to get parts to maintain a state of good repair. So when things break, it's getting harder and harder to fix them. And these devices will not be compatible with the new back office system that we're working on. So this is a separate project that's running in parallel to upgrade our back office that runs our automatic fare collection system. Can move on, thank you. So the project I'm introducing today, our next generation of fare vending machines, is aimed at procuring and deploying the next generation of these devices. This addresses a state of good repair and modernization needs for the existing fare vending machines in the rail stations. So at a very high level, our goals are to improve customer service, reduce our operating costs, and achieve a modern design aesthetic. And then our objectives are to right size the fleet, as we're calling it. We know customer behaviors have changed a lot since we procured these devices. We've introduced some new technology, such as Smart Trip and Mobile Wallet. So we're anticipating we'll actually need less machines than we currently have. We also need to align this to our back office schedule. And we're also looking to be innovative here. I mean, we purchased the last machines decades ago. It's not a purchase we make often, so we want to be very thoughtful and figure out ways to make these, you know, future-proof, customer-friendly, and make sure that what we're designing is going to be great, because we anticipate having these for lots of years to come. So right now we're working through requirements and a scope of work for the purchase. So as part of this process, we've come up with a set of guiding principles, which is outlined on this slide. So our guiding principles to this effort are first and foremost to be customer-centric and accessible by all. We're looking for a timeless and modular physical design. We'd like a flexible and configurable system architecture. We'd like it to be software-based with adaptable interfaces, improved efficiencies and sustainability, and future-proof to and accommodate evolving payment trends. This is just to give you a high-level overview of our project schedule. Obviously, things are subject to change, and we're very early on in the process. But to give you an idea of what we're looking at here, this is a very high-level bar chart outlining kind of the key elements and phases of the project schedule. On the left-hand side of the chart, there's some indicators of the different rows. These indicate the different phases and elements of the project. So going from top to bottom, in the first row, it's requirements and scope of work. Then we have our procurement process. Then we have the design build phase, followed by installation. On the right-hand side of the chart, in the columns, these indicate calendar years. So we start with calendar year 2023 and go through calendar year 2027 on the right hand, farthest right-hand side. So we are currently in the requirements and scope of work development phase. This started in April of this year, and we anticipate to conclude that process in December of this calendar year, 2023. Since this is a very major purchase, we anticipate pretty much all of calendar year 2024 being dedicated to the procurement cycle, and then design and build phases to start early in calendar year 2025, concluding mid-year about 2026, and then installation would start early in calendar year of 2026, concluding by pretty much the end of 2026, early calendar year 2027. So as I mentioned, we are very early on in this process. We just started working on requirements, and we thought this was a great opportunity to engage with this group here. And just to make sure that we're covering needs within our set of requirements and scope of work. So I had a few discussion topics that are outlined on this slide. I will read through those briefly, but mainly just looking to gather some initial feedback as we write these requirements. So I'll just run through the bulleted list for those on the call, and then feel free to raise a hand if you have something you'd like to add. So what works about today's fare vending machines that you don't want to see changed? What are pain points that you'd most like to see improved? What have customers told you about interacting with the device? And finally, what have you seen in other fare vending machines, ATMs, or other self-service kiosks that you would like to see in the new fare vending machines?
Dr. Posner, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Phil Posner. The most common complaint we have had is not sufficient number of the low vision machines.
Okay.
Currently, there's one low vision machine and three normal machines, and everybody uses the low vision machines, and the low vision people can't get to them. So I think a sufficient number of the low vision machines would be really helpful. The other thing that we have had complaints, not from locals, but from visitors. and that is the complexity of the machine and having to insert their card. So the new touch cards are great, and even cell phones would be great, using an Apple Wallet or something like that. And that would help the out-of-towners. And simplification for people that have cognitive issues. And there are some people that have both low vision and difficulty in hearing.
Okay.
And so having large print for those people or louder hearing for those people that they might be able to log into on their cell phone. Bluetooth, okay. Basically.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And I'll let other people speak. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Posner. Sandy, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Sandy Newzel. Speaking on the low vision and going digital, can you accommodate a lot of people who have vision challenges? When they look at a digital screen, there's too much brightness, and it would be a good idea to have an option where you could make a dark background with light text for information. I mean, people with normal vision can generally read that, but I think you should be able to toggle back and forth fairly easily with all the digital software programming available these days. And I agree with Phil that having some audio for people who are blind might also be helpful, but that's challenging because of privacy issues. People wouldn't want, I don't know, it's just difficult to have a machine reading out loud to you. And I don't know the best solution, but maybe others on the call would have a good idea to maintain the privacy of the person using the machine. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, those are definitely all things we've been looking into. But this is, yeah, I'm notating all this too to make sure this stuff gets captured. I know headphone jacks are going to be required. We're looking at, you know, Bluetooth capability to attaching your own headphones. So this is all great feedback to hear.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. Steve, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Wendy. And thank you for handling the process that I can't do since I can't see everybody. So I appreciate that. Catherine or Kathy, I'm sure it's on your list of things to do, but it would be ideal to involve the station managers because more than anybody, they probably see the gamut of issues and what's working right now and what's not working. So I'm sure that's on your list, but you may want a questionnaire as well as interviews with them in the early stages.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're actually doing, we're meeting, yeah, there's a focus group session with station managers we're doing next week. We've been talking to Paul Bumbrier, the head of rail infrastructure operations, but we're meeting with some station managers starting in the next week to definitely get that feedback.
That's great. But, may I also suggest that sometimes talking to somebody individually as opposed to in a group gets more specific comments.
Okay.
If you're gathering people together in a focus group, you know, some people may be overshadowed by others, and so you may want to do both of them.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Now you're going to give me stuff to do during my commute. Stop and talk to the station managers.
The other thing is, I'm sure you're going to be testing a prototype before you actually begin to make the purchase, since these are going to be quite expensive. Am I right?
We're still working out the details of how that's going to work, but we definitely are trying to accommodate some sort of, I don't know if you have to go on site to visit or if we can have them bring the devices here, probably once we get down into kind of like elimination rounds. But yes, we are planning to get our hands on these before we agree to a purchase.
Okay. And one quickie. There's a message that often confuses me, and it might confuse other people. When you're using a credit card, and you press the right button, the message says, "Place card in machine." Now, I know some people are confused initially whether they should place the Smart Trip card or place the credit card. Naturally, it's the credit card, but I've seen people try to place the Smart Trip card. So that's a suggestion in your instructions, if you will, as you're developing those.
That's a good call out. That is confusing. And I do believe we're planning on doing some testing, usability testing, when it comes time to go through screen flows, prompts, and all of that stuff. But that's a good one to watch out for, because it is confusing.
And just the last thing. If you're inside the station, you can't do a reload. And I find myself oftentimes it's when I'm in a station and realize I have a 10-minute wait that I'd love to, you know, do a reload, do something while I'm there. So I'm wondering whether that's factored in the number of machines you're going to be purchasing.
Are you speaking about setting up auto reload or something different?
Well, inside the station, you can't really do a reload of your trip.
Got
car.
It. Oh, you mean once you're in the paid side?
Yeah, okay. You know, you can add money to get out.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean. So you know, since you're looking at all possibilities, and these are going to be used for quite some time, you may want to add a machine that permits you to do everything inside.
No, that's a good idea. We are rethinking the way we're doing the exit fare machines, where they're so restrictive right now, where it's really just you can only add the money to get out.
It's a huge machine, yeah, but it's taking up a lot of space.
So that's something, yeah, we can definitely take that in consideration. I haven't thought much more about it other than if you're trying to exit fare, some people may not want to do exact, right? Like, I would want to just say, you know what, I'm going to put $20 on. I'd like to leave the rest on in stored value. But I haven't thought about reloading when you're on the paid side. So I notated that. Right. We can look into that.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Patrick, I see your hand is up, and then Marcy Goldstein. Patrick, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Anu. Good presentation. Thank you. I was going to say, I know I've worked with some other vending machines headphones or ear jack or something like that, you put that in, it automatically is going to turn on speech. So then you don't have to worry about that, which might be a nice thing to have as a feature. A lot of what I was going to say has already been said, but sort of tracking what Sandy was talking about with contrast, I would imagine you would have a numerical contrast ratio that the machine would have, so that individuals with low vision particularly would be able to have a sufficient numerical contrast that, you know, that we see around. I would think that I've seen some machines, particularly at the airports or at McDonald's, whatever, that have very good color contrast. So I would think that would be fairly easy to look up. I know that as far as kiosk machines and that sort of thing, that there are standards that the Access Board has put out with respect to what that color contrast could be. And I think that would be easy to follow and it would be a good requirement to replicate.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Thank you.
Space, video now started. Stop my space, video now stop.
Marcy, go ahead, please.
Was those words that I have dexterity problems? Sometimes it's hard to get your card into that little hole, whatever you call. Are you going to do something about that?
I'm sorry, I was getting a little feedback from someone behind me. Can you repeat the question?
For those of us that have dexterity problems. Sometimes it's difficult in some stations to get our card in.
Oh, so or it's a question about dexterity issues with getting the card from where it's dispensed?
Entering the card.
Marcy, this is Carol Lopez. I'm wondering, I'm also having trouble hearing you, but are you asking, you're explaining that people with dexterity issues have a hard time inserting a card into the device, is that?
Yes. What?
Okay.
Yes. Gotcha. Yeah, so in the future, we are looking at doing contactless, which should help. You don't have to insert the card and swipe it out. But I can definitely make notate as for something for us to watch while we're doing testing and stuff to make sure that we're checking that from a dexterity lens. Absolutely.
Same button. Hold my hand now raised.
Pat, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. The other third point that I was going to make, since I'm old, I forgot it, but I remembered it again, would be doing testing with seniors. I think as far as usability is concerned, understanding, you know, you could have all the features accessible on the machine, but if you can get seniors to where your machines are going to be for a demo, I think that would be great, because then you'd get a chance to see how is it, you know, it might be technically correct, but hard to confusing for them to use. I think you'd get some really good feedback that way. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a great idea. They're definitely a key customer group that we're looking at.
Great. I figured you probably had them covered. Yeah.
Good. I hadn't thought about specifically testing for seniors or usability testing, but I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Sandy, go ahead.
And yes, along with that, the seniors want to drag their feet and not use smartphone tapping type, you know, Apple Pay. They may be more comfortable putting a $20 bill in or some kind of change. So you did mention that you're going to have all pay options, and I just want to double check that you'll still have cash, credit card options for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Cash and credit card will definitely both be options. The primary purpose of the fare vending machines is really because we still need to do cash acceptance. Since, I mean, we have Smart Trip and Wallet. So if you're using your smartphone, I mean, there's an option there, but we definitely, for lots of reasons, want to continue to accept cash. So that's one of the main reasons that we still need the machines. So, yes.
Because my husband and I have definitely noticed there are places where in restaurants, when you're traveling on the highway, you cannot no longer use cash in many situations. So I want WMATA to be progressive and still let people use cash.
Yes, it's the plan. We anticipate we'll be taking less cash than because it's been trending down every year, but we have absolutely no plans to eliminate cash acceptance.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Dr. Posner, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Phil Posner again, and I know this is a bus rail committee meeting and you're focusing on rail, but I wonder if you're looking at the possibility of having machines at bus stops, because we've talked about that to speed boarding. And in some of the hub bus stops, where you have the new fancy shelters, it might be nice to have that, because I know WMATA has tried for a year to go to no cash at all on buses, and I'm not advocating that. But if it could be put in at appropriate places and still let people with cash get on, but those people that like to use the vending machines, that would really speed access to the bus. Just
yeah.
A thought.
Yeah, I know. Then that makes sense. I think the challenge is the environments typically very different at bus stops. So I'll be honest, the primary for this project is looking at the rail stations. We can definitely explore some options, but I can't make any promises at that point, but I'll notate it down and we'll definitely explore that because I agree. It is harder for bus customers. And
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Philippa, I see your hand is up and then Steve. Philippa, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm just still trying to understand the headphones.
Okay. What we're in early scoping phases. So what our current options that we're looking into is, there's audio instructions that are going to be available at the fare vending machines. Current regulations, I think, require an audio jack. So you can plug in headphones, which we plan to have an audio jack. We're also looking at options to see if we can do it via Bluetooth connectivity. Since I know many headphones these days, a lot of people are shifting towards wireless headphones and things like that. So we thought it would be a better customer experience if we didn't just have to limit it to an audio jack.
Okay, the audio jack is where my question is. For instance, the plug is different for a smartphone, for an Android, and then they're supposed to be going to some universal type jack in the near future, maybe next year. That all
yes, will devices... will the audio instructions be multilingual? English, Spanish, Chinese, French?
Wait, I want the answer on the jack first.
I don't have an immediate answer on your jack, but that is something I can look into about the universal standard that's coming up.
Right. Okay. That was my question, actually. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Philippa. Dr. Posner, did you want to finish what you were saying?
Oh, it's just a question for the audio instructions. Will they be multilingual? English, French, German, Spanish, Chinese, French.
We have yet to. Yeah. So we've just started this discussion. We don't have a full decision on which languages will be supported, but I think we're leaning towards at least some of the main translations being available in audio. So Spanish, for instance, would be high on the list. So we're working on the details of that, but it's been in discussion.
Thank you. Just to throw you a curveball, the major language in Arlington is Urdu.
I know, and where I live in Silver Spring, it's Amharic.
Exactly.
Language is a hot topic. We have a very diverse region. So it's interesting when looking at our language assistance plan and all the languages we need to support. It's not just cut and dry. You need an English and Spanish. We have a lot to support, which we do plan on providing that in language services in the new machines. Just trying to work out all the details around that.
Great. Steve, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Phil, thank you very much for that comment regarding multilingual. What I've seen in some cities is the instructions are actually digitized so that if someone is speaking a language other than English, they'll just push maybe one of eight different languages that will have instructions but appearing on the screen. So it won't clutter up the basic front for most people, but for others, it will have a larger choice, and that seems to work pretty well.
That's one of the benefits of why we're looking into doing like a larger information display that'll be digital, because we'll have more flexibility. So instead of having to print things in multiple languages, it's more in one of the corners, as you would on a website or something, you click on an arrow and you get your choice of languages to choose from. And then the machine will guide you through your choices versus right now where it's a printed sign of instructions all over the place. We're hoping to streamline that and make it more intuitive with the digital interface.
Yeah, I would, I don't know. I feel a little funny when I'm first asked, do I want English? So what you might say is, do you want the language other than English? And then if they push yes, then have maybe the six or eight languages that are possible.
That's a good suggestion.
And they go and the instructions are on a digital screen that that is available.
Yeah, good suggestion.
Thank you.
It's not to jump in again, but there is Google Translate, and if it is digital, you might be able to hook that up to Digital Translate or one of the translating software packages. I use that at the Library of Congress all the time to talk to visitors.
And it also has its limitations. I know there's some issues with literal translations that come from Google Translate, but we are definitely planning on having translated content. So,
well, but it's pretty simple on how to use the machine. Push the button, pull the button, stick it in, pull it out. Pretty easy.
Our goal is to make this more simple across the board for all of our customers, because right now we know the user experience is not ideal.
Well, great. We do not have any more hands up. Katie, Sinclair, you've done a great job in answering all the questions, and thank you for your presentation.
And thank you all for your input. I did take notes of all of this, and we'll take that back to the team as we work through the requirements. Really great input. So really appreciate your participation and your time on this. So thank you for having me today.
All right, thank you. And if there are any follow-up questions, the AOC members can email those to me and I will be happy to share those with Katie. Thank you so much, Katie. Have a great evening. Okay, so now our next topic for today's meeting is the temporary bus shelters, and we have Anne Delaney and Laurent Odd to present. So, to you.
Hello, I'm on?
Yes, you are.
All right, very good. Hello.
Presentation as well. Thank you.
Very good. So my name is Anne Delaney. I am the project coordinator for Metro's Art in Transit program. And we would like to present projects, art projects for the temporary bus shelters at selected Metro stations. Next slide. So the Art in Transit program, on the slide, I will be reading the slide. The Art in Transit program incorporates visual and performing arts into the Metrorail system to enhance the experience of customers, the communities it serves, and the capital region at large. As part of its mission, Art in Transit utilizes the Metro Transit environment as a place where customers and the public can enjoy the arts as a regular part of their daily lives. The Art in Transit program also works to mitigate the impact of construction on surrounding communities by incorporating visual artworks. For the bus shelter projects, the Art in Transit has been coordinating with the project team to ensure that temporary bus shelters are fitted into vibrant graphics, with vibrant graphics. So far, shelters at four of the stations, notably Fort Totten, Brookland, and Tacoma, have received graphics, and Shady Grove will receive graphics in the coming weeks. And there will be more to be created and installed in the coming months. One thing I would like to emphasize also is that the Art in Transit program really takes, you know, makes a point to create or commission artworks that are site specific. By that, I mean that they can be inspired by the station or the area where the artworks will be installed. So next slide, please. Is it Laurent who has control?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So the next slide, I am showing an image. We started, the first project was at Fort Totten Station. And there's a text on the left and an image to the right. I will first focus on giving information about the project at Fort Totten Station. Then I will describe the image. As part of the Fort Totten Station bus shelter replacement project, the Art in Transit program realized colorful graphics printed on corrugated plastic boards and installed on the 5 temporary wooden bus shelters to create a bright and cheerful environment around the station's bus loop. The graphics are based on renderings of the station realized in the 1970s by Harry Weiss and Associates, the architectural firm that designed the National Capital Region's metro system. From 1966 to 1994, hundreds of employees completed thousands of hand drawn designs of the metro system. And among many talented professionals, Gene Street is credited for producing almost 1,000 renderings, capturing the design development process for each station. Street's drawings of Fort Totten are reproduced on these bus shelters. And the image that you see on this slide, it's a black and white line drawing of the metro running over a brook, and there is a landscape, you know, nature is what you see also. So, you know, just to show, he really realized drawings that not only represented the station, but also the users of the stations, the lampposts, and everything that was connected to the station. So for this station, we used the Gene Street's renderings, 5 renderings, drawings, but the graphics have been enhanced with watercolor effect. And in this case, like the other stations, you know, one can try to decipher the line drawings, but you can also see abstract forms. You know, we with art also, we want to leave it to the imagination of the viewer. So I will, going back to the presentation, oops, you skipped an image, but yes, next. Sorry about that. Yes. So on this, the image that we are now showing, we see the colorful graphics on 3 double bus shelters. There are 5 at Fort Totten, but here we see 5 of them. There are different graphics on each double bus shelter. And what we have aimed to do was really to wrap the bus shelters on all sides from top to bottom. There are windows on each side, exterior sides, as well as the back of each bus shelter for visibility and also for safety issues. Next slide, please. So the next slide shows the interior of one of the bus shelters. In the case of Fort Totten, the graphics, the panels cover only the top half of the interior of the bus shelter. And we also made a point to include an information panel that is on the left hand side of the image. And in this case for Fort Totten, the text of course talks about this project, but also is presented in English and in Spanish. And we also included on all the panels a QR code that leads to the Art in Transit website and to exactly to the page about this art project. Next slide, please. Another station where we have created graphics is Tacoma Station. And in the image here, we see 2 of the 3 bus shelters that have graphics. The graphics are inspired by a historic map of the neighborhood, which is in the background, and branded with the words Tacoma Station in bright colors. So there is a blue bus shelters, an orange one, and a very vibrant yellow further up. We don't see it on the photo, but it's further up and closer to the station entrance. Next slide, please. On this slide, we wanted to show the interior of the bus shelter and how also with the team, the project team, we discussed actually the benefit of covering more than half of the interior of the bus shelter. So the panels now cover the entire surface of the interior of the bus shelters. You can see light inside the bus shelters. And again, we don't see it, but the information panels are on the interior side of the bus shelter. Next slide, please. This is, the slide is about Brookland Station. And in the case of that station, the photo that is shown on this slide is a photo taken from the bus loop at Brookland Station, where we see a part of the Metro bus on the right. And in the background, you know, there is the landmark Brookland painted on the wall of the building adjacent to the metro station. In this case, this photo turned into almost a line drawings, and we can show maybe the next slide, please, where actually there are two colors for each bus shelter. And you know, one that really where there's the outline of the image and the background is of another color. So it can be seen not only, it can be very challenging to really see clearly the image, or you know, as people spend time and you know, keep looking at the image, things may grow on them, but it's also, the lines can also be seen as abstract, an abstract artwork. At Brookland, there are actually seven temporary bus shelters. Currently, there's only these two have been covered with panels, but the remaining bus shelters will be covered in the near future. And I think this is my last slide, so I will pass it on to Laurent Odd, who will continue the presentation. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Anne, and thank you everybody for here tonight. If you don't mind, we'll just, is that okay to keep the questions until the end?
Yes, so we can take questions. Okay. Yes, thank you.
All right, well, good evening, everybody. I'm Laurent Odd, and I have been managing the Art in Transit program at Metro for the past 8 years. And I wanted to give you a little bit more information about what we do and how we try to make sure that the artwork we have throughout the system can be shared with as many people as possible. We've been implementing real solutions to make sure that the visual arts pieces we have throughout the system and our facilities can be enjoyed by everybody. So as Anne was mentioning a little earlier, the Art in Transit program has been working with visual artists and performing artists. I'm not going to cover performing arts today, but we're going to stick with visual arts. We work with art professionals, architects, engineers, community organizations, jurisdictional art councils, developers, to create projects that captures and reflects the spirit and vitality of communities served by Metro. So we do several things. We have several missions as part of the Art in Transit program. So we utilize the Ramada Transit environment as a place where customers and the public can enjoy arts on a regular basis as part of their everyday life. We work, as we just saw, with the bus shelters to mitigate the impact of construction on surrounding communities by including or incorporating visual artworks. We also encourage private and public partnerships to support art projects. We have different partners and different, very different types of partners throughout the region. And we also hope, hopefully, contribute to the dynamic cultural and artistic scene of the capital regions by working with local, national, and international artists. One of the projects I wanted to share with you is a project we activated a few months ago at our Bladensburg Birth Garage, sorry about that, and where we are reconstructing the garage, and we worked with the community to develop graphics for the perimeter of the site to create something that was both hiding the construction that behind it and creating something that was a little bit more visually appealing. The site is a little bit challenging in many different ways. There's a lot of, it's along Bladensburg Road, which is has a lot of traffic. We wanted to make sure that it was something that could be catched, you know, as you move by or from a, if you're on a bus, on a car, but also experience if you're walking on the sidewalk by past it. So we focused on different elements like that are associated with the site itself. As Anne mentioned, many of our projects are site-specific. In the case of Bladensburg Bus Garage, it is originally a site where in the 19th century, there was a foundry where the Statue of Freedom from the Capitol was cast. There's also many different kind of activities that happened in the site before Metro took over in the 1970s. And there were bakeries, there were a whole lot of different things. So we tried to work with the community to make sure we had topics and elements and historical information that was captured on the graphics, and also that they would be big enough when the text was actually printed on it, that the text could be read very easily, even as you can might see on the right side, there is a photo showing the banners from across the street where the scale of the words that we introduced on the graphics can be easily read. And also on the left side of the screen, you have a view showing the banners from the sidewalks where you can see the different colors and different shapes that of the elements that are represented and capturing landmarks of the neighborhood. Some of the other projects, another temporary project we've done is something we did earlier in the spring. We worked with our sustainability group at Metro and our marketing group to develop bus wraps for three buses in the system. Those buses ran on three different routes in one each in routes in each of our jurisdictions. They were wrapped with drawings created by children throughout the region, IHK 26, who created drawings inspired by public transportation and honoring Earth Day. So one of the images you see on the right is a bus wrapped showing three different drawings that were enlarged and to wrap the bus. And they're showing drawings, very colorful drawings of buses and nature, birds, trees, and views of landmarks in DC and throughout the region. And the photo on the left show actually our partners in this case, the young children whose drawings were selected to be placed as or developed as part of the bus wrap. We have also permanent artworks throughout the system. I'm just going to go very few of them, because I know we're going to run out of time and have quite a few hands raised already. One of the most recent artwork we have in the system is at the Potomac Yard Station. We have two pieces at a station, one per each of the pavilion. By the same artist. It's an artist from California. His name is Rob Lee. He created two pieces inspired by Virginia and the local flora. And the North Pavilion is a large painted aluminum piece with disc placed at different angles. There are, it looks a little bit like a large tapestry hanging in front of the glass wall that is part of the elevator section of the station. Those discs are shaped a little bit like cherry blossom flowers, and the colors, which are different hues of pinks, are also evocative of the cherry blossom elements colors. On the right side is a view of the South Pavilion. The South Pavilion, the artist also was inspired by nature, by another flower that is from Virginia. It is the bluebell, Virginia bluebell. He captured the colors also, different shades of the colors. It's the same principle we have. So in this case of blues and greens, those are discs that are also at different angles and creating panels that are attached in front of the upper section of the pavilion, at the entrance pavilion. At our new building that Ramada has just opened or is opening in each of the jurisdictions we serve, we also have new artworks. At the Metro headquarters, we have three artworks, one in the lobby and two on the outside. Each of them were created by a group of a young couple of artists from New York City. They're both actually architects, and they have now moved on to creating public artworks. And it really, I think, they captured many elements of what Metro is about by both the use of colors. Each of the artworks, may they be inside or outside, are evocative of the lines of Metro. Inside, the piece inside is blue, yellow, and green. I'm looking at the image and I can't even remember my colors. And the two pieces outside are yellow, orange, and different hues of reddish pink, evocative of the yellow, orange, and red lines of the Metro system. The piece that is inside, which is on the left side of the screen, is also is made out of ropes and metal frame. It is shaped to evoke the coffers of the stations in the core of the Metro system. If you were to look at it from below, it creates kind of a grid pattern that is evocative of the L'Enfant design for the city. We find a similar inspiration for the large sculpture that is outside of the building where we see an intersection of planes and lines. It's a three-dimensional tall sculpture. It is 18 and a half feet tall that is shaped a little bit like a actually, it's meant to evoke both the the Washington Monument, and the shape of the block on which the building is built. We find a similar shape also on the yellow bench that is on the right side. and also in front of the building, which is a little bit kind of a horizontal version and much smaller size than the large sculpture on the front of the building.
Oh, excuse me. Could I interrupt? Yeah. Could I interrupt?
Yeah.
I think we have a number of questions relating to your project. So perhaps we could move your presentation along in order to get to the questions.
I will just do one last little thing then, because I think it could cover some of the questions we have.
Sure. We have two other presentations today, and we're backed up in time because we must finish by 6 o'clock.
That, if you give me 30 seconds, I want to go through that slide because I think it will help. One of the things we've been trying to do is to make sure that we can, as I mentioned earlier, to reach out to as many people we can. Those are hard, as you can see, to describe sometimes those artworks. And we want to make sure that we can, people with different level of visions can have some idea of what we're doing and what the things we've been working on over the last year or so is to develop plaques that are accessible near the artwork where information is both inscribed on the plaque in raised letter, and we introduced also Braille and a line, a drawing that can be touched either in relief or carved into the surface of the plaque to try to help people to have an idea of what we've been doing when it comes to visual arts. We also have done this for our website and our videos, where we introduce closed captioning, and we make sure that the screen readers options are enabled on any information we have on our website. And we can provide the website link into the chat if that's of any interest, or at a later time, to make sure that people can experience this obviously better than I can do on the screen right now. And that will be it. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurent. And actually, Chair Kaplan has his hand up, followed by Vanessa Cole. So, Steve, go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you very much. By the way, art is extraordinary in all respects. I think everyone agrees. Based upon what you've said, here are my concerns. One, there's no glass. Riders go into one of these shelters and they want to see what bus is coming. The operator also wants to see if there are any riders waiting for the bus. So you really do need to have glass on the sides. There's another aspect to that too. It's dangerous to be potentially inside one of those shelters, when three sides are covered. I know I would feel uncomfortable sitting in one of those and pretty much being invisible to other people, especially during some parts of the day. The third thing, I don't see the presence of Next Bus in large enough letters so that people can see them. And that may be there, but I didn't see it in the presentation. Also, with all of this covered, where are you going to put the map? Oh, I see. On the side. Well, that's a question. Where are you going to put the map so people can look at that and determine where to go? And the last thing, the art on the sides of the bus. Many people who ride buses have an issue with covering the windows. It's very difficult to see. And it's particularly difficult to see outside in the evening when people want to look out and, if nothing else, see if there's any danger outside before they disembark. And so I'm a little concerned about that. And sorry for being verbose. Thank you.
No, thank you. I think so. I want to answer the question. I'm going to start with easy one.
Wait,
and then we'll go back. I think there's other people here on the call, on the call or on the presentation that might be able to answer some of it. So I'll talk about the bus first.
Because we're kind of backed up in time, okay. And there are other people who have comments, would it be perhaps appropriate to answer some of these questions in writing through Anu?
Sure, no problem. One of the things is, so regarding the bus shelter, some of it actually will not come. We are just covering, we have nothing to do with the design of the shelters themselves. We are just providing a graphic, colorful elements for the shelters. The design of the shelters themselves itself is something that comes from another team. So I will let that other team respond to you when it regards to the shelter design, the openings, the visibility, and the accessibility of to the signage inside the shelters. Regarding the bus, I am more than happy to get back to you in writing.
Laurent, who else is, this is Carol Lopez. Who else is here that could answer that question? Do you want me to address it?
I saw both Jonathan and I saw there was a few people involved with the project that are on the call, but I don't know if you want to say anything, Carol, please go ahead.
Well, Steve, I just wanted to let you know that all of these issues about safety were brought up when they were discussing this design. And that's the reason that they introduced these windows. What happens is that the structural integrity of the existing bus, clear glass buses, was decayed to the point where it was dangerous and it was condemned. So WMATA has a really difficult funding process. And so the best thing we could WMATA could do is to create these wooden structures, sort of like a temporary shelter when we're doing rehabilitations. And that's why these windows on both on the sides of the shelter and on the back of the shelter were installed. And the artwork is basically making plywood shelters more enjoyable while they're there temporarily until we get procurement and the funding to pay for the final shelters. We advocated for seats, benches that had armrests, and there is a bench that has an armrest on the inside of this. The digital sign, if this original shelter had a digital sign that said the next bus was arriving, it was reinstalled and lighting was installed inside these shelters as well. They are absolutely temporary. And the reason we asked Laurent and his team to present this is because I think Ms. Rush mentioned it at the last meeting. And I thought you should see what the committee should see what is being done as a temporary measure until we get the procurement and funding to put the bus shelters.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Rico. I have a question as well.
Okay, Rico, we have Vanessa Colts, and after Vanessa, we can have your question. Vanessa, go ahead.
Yes, hi, thank you. It sounds like a wonderful project, even though I can't visually see it, but I love art. So I was concerned, my first question is, the artists, are those artists just your architect, or are they people who can apply to put their artwork on these panels? And then what type of protection is it for the artist? Is that his original work or their original work so that graffiti or whatever can't be written on it? And then my last question is for the buses. Now, is that going to be on the side of buses, or are you saying it's in the windows of the buses?
So regarding the bus shelters, we have two types of projects. Either we produce the graphics internally, so we have a graphic designer that did some of the graphics. And when we worked with, we have another couple of other projects coming up for those bus shelters, where we're working with local artists through different organizations. That we make sure that those artworks, they're not kind of, the design is original, but they are creating digital files that we print on those corrugated plastic panels that can be reprinted if they're too damaged. And actually we are currently exploring ways to cover them with some type of anti-graffiti coating, so we can address, you know, vandalism or graffitis on them. Regarding the bus,
and the other thing is, how long does one design stay up? I mean, you're going to keep them circulating.
They're going to stay. Those shelters are temporary, so they will be
not
there.
Not the shelter, the graphic, but the art itself.
The art stays as long as the shelter is there.
I mean, the variety, are you going to switch them up monthly, or are you going to keep them, you know, you say you have lots of them, so how often do you change?
Each shelter is slightly different, so each graphic is site-specific and designed for the specific station. And right now, don't have any plans to change the graphic at the station, so of the graphic is designed to stay as long at the station or at the shelter as long as the shelter is up.
Okay, thank you.
It was a temporary project that lasted only about 3 weeks. We had conversation again. We were very aware about the issue of visibility. And this is something, if it's being reproduced in the future, it will be addressed differently. In this case, we had a request to actually cover the buses the way they were covered. And we did the best we could working with, you know, those graphics that have, that provide some kind of visibility from the inside. But I totally understand the concern that you and Mr. Caffin have shared about, you know, creating this problems of visibility and for people not seeing inside or outside properly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa. Rico, I know you have a question. Rico, I just want to read a chat message by Fred Posner stating the temporary bus shelter look very dark. Dark, only one overhead bulb. The print on the signs seems very small and not tactile or braille. So that was the comment in the chat. Rico, go ahead.
All right, I have a question about how long them shelves be up there by, how long have them brown shelters up there? Because you see, when people go to like get the 80 bus up there or whatever bus to go up there, they don't see the signs for waiting for the next bus. So how long before the other shelters be replaced at the Bronx?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jonathan Guder. Managing these temporary transition bus shelters. Let's start at least to clarify why we are doing all these kinds of things and when we are expecting, you know, the next permanent shelters. You know, as you know, the current brown Wamata shelter is nearly 50 years old. And while the shelter has to be maintained, you know, some have become a safety hazard even because of corrosion and also do not offer even customer protection from the elements because the plexiglass is already removed and we couldn't put it even on the channels. And to give the shelter edge and replacement parts, you know, we replaced operation and maintenance thing until this level. And some of the shelters, the brown shelters, we couldn't repair over at this time. About 75 temporary wooden shelter we are planning to replace because of it's not in a state of good repairs. That's why we are planning, at least for the safety reason, you know, if someone is leaning in corroded shelter, that is another liability issue for metros, and that's why we are trying to put it these temporary wooden shelters. For example, on phase one, this 23 bus shelter we are replacing at Fort Hutton, Brookland, Addison, and Rhode Island. Rhode Island we are not planning at this time. However, the permanent bus shelter is coming very soon, within 12 to 18 months. It is under solicitation. And the project, the contract award will be on September timeframe. I am hoping on this four station, we'll get it a permanent, design and implementation. It will take place within the next 12 to 18 months. The remaining 50 locations, Metro originally planning to address through design build project and a small business enterprise project, but that is due to the budget reason we couldn't address it. We have to address it this 5 years ago, but still is rolling over. So far here, I am hoping we'll get it once the phase one, that means the pilot one for the 33 shelters. Once it is complete within 12 months, we will move on to the next one. Regarding the lighting, as a temporary bus shelter, wooden shelter, I'm not in favor of them compared to what you I'm agreed all the comments, but this is temporary. We are discussed at the beginning of this project to make it the opening bigger, but because of the structural integrity of the wooden shelter, we couldn't make up, the windows more than that. That's why you can see it's this kind of remedy, at least to make it a little bit comfortable for our customers. However, when we are addressing the permanent one, everything it is rounded with glass, and you will see just like what you did at, on the yellow line and Franconia side, but the design is a little bit changed. We don't know exactly what kind of design we are expecting. However, we'll get it something to satisfy our customers within the next 12 months. Regarding lighting, I can see it. One per each shelters. I didn't see it any complaint. Let us figure it out. And if it's not enough during nighttime, we can address these issues, at least to add one more light fixture at each shelters. And I can work out with plant and system maintenance regarding that. I think this is why, and we are planning to complete the first phase in this July, but the second phase for the remaining 50, it will come out within the next couple of months. This is what's happening. And if you have any additional questions, please let me know.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Anton, and thank you, Rico. Sandy? Did you have any comments, questions?
No. It's been covered what I wanted to say. So thank you.
Wonderful. So this is Anil. I do not see anyone else's hands up. Thank you, Lauren and Anne and Yonatan for the wonderful presentation to keep our committee updated as far as what's happening with the bus shelters. If there are any additional comments or questions from the committee, please do email those to me and I'll be happy to share it with the team. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks.
Okay, so at the beginning of the meeting, the agenda was amended. And initially, we would have had the topic of blue, orange, silver lines study that has been going on for a number of years. It had been placed on hold. Now it's back up in the works. And that was the topic. However, Dr. Posner has suggested a different topic on those lines and had asked Carol Lopez to share some updates. So Carol, I would ask for you to take over.
Sure. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to let you know that the Orange Line will reopen on July 17th. The shuttles are currently going from Vienna to Falls Church. We also have a local shuttle between Vienna and Dunloren and West Falls Church, operated by a coach bus. And there are also ADA vans that are located at the station's Kiss and Ride in sight of the shuttle bus stops. And they will pull up to the stop as requested. Okay, and then the express bus between West Falls Church and Vienna are located by, are operated by Metrobus. So they're you don't need an additional shuttle, ADA shuttle for those. And at peak times, the shuttles operate every 5 minutes, and at off-peak times, they are operating at 10 minutes. A similar process will take place when the green line is closed. I guess it's happening between July 22nd through September 4th for planned construction. On July 22nd to 23rd, there will be no green line at Fort Totten, but the red line will still be available. So they're going to be shuttles that take you from between those stations from Fort Totten all the way to Greenbelt and also a shuttles that go from one station to the other. That's the local shuttles. So that is the update. I don't have any additional specific information, but we can always send that to you via email after this meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Dr. Posner, since you have brought up the question, is that the information that you were looking for?
It's a start. Okay. There's a discussion going on at the RAC that Mr. Sheehan can report on next month. So I think it's okay because there have been some major complaints brought to the RAC about them. And living in the area in the old days with the traffic that exists and the number of passengers, it's not surprising that there are just inadequate number of seats available. And speed without special bus lanes for that area. So yes, that's good that we heard a little bit about it. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Madam Chair Musil, just to share this information with everyone, Steve Kappen, who was chairing the meeting till now, had to leave the meeting because, as I had mentioned earlier, he is traveling and he's no longer able to stay connected with the meeting. So Sandy Musil, the second vice chair, is going to chair the meeting for the rest of the evening.
Okay, so Anu, with the modified agenda, can you remind me what is next to cover?
Sure. So we actually just covered the added agenda topic, and we are right on time for our next scheduled topic, which is Hedinger Award 2023. And then we have the public section if we have any. So the Hettinger Award 2023 is the next topic.
Has anyone sent any information to Anu, any suggestions, or does anyone have any suggestions they'd like to share now for candidates for the Hettinger Award?
Madam Chair, just to recap from our AAC meeting and from the previous brief discussions that we had, the thought or the decision was that the Hettinger Award 2023 will be held virtually in December at the AAC meeting. And just to recap again, what has been discussed briefly was that the nomination process would be during September, with the voting process completed in November, in October, giving us time to finalize an order and ensure that the award gets received by the recipient in November. There's award ceremony at the AAC meeting in December.
Okay.
This is Rico. I have a question.
I'm having surgery in October, so I won't be attending my surgery October 3rd. I'm having called a pensioner surgery, so I won't be attending. I will be out.
Thank you for informing us, Rico, and best of luck for your recovery. Mr. Srihan, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd just like to say a couple things, Anu. I'm real pleased that, first of all, that we're doing this in December. It's always been a little bit confusing when we've awarded somebody an award in the next calendar year. So I think that's great. And I think this gives us plenty of time through July, August, really to get our ideas straight and thoughts. I'm a little bit behind on my email, but you'll send out the criteria in email for us to put forward and how we can put the awards and submit the awards.
Yes, the criteria, all the information, all the details will be shared with the entire committee. I initiated this conversation now to ensure that everybody has sufficient time to think about who they would like to nominate. Just to add, there was a comment about nomination at the last meeting, and Ms. Rush had requested some additional information as far as how the nominations would be accepted. So because of this conversation now in July is to make sure that everyone has sufficient time. And there are no concerns about not having the time to be able to nominate. So if anyone has any questions, any comments, any thoughts about the nominations, you can come off of mute and make your comments, or if you'd like to send your emails afterwards, please do.
Anu, this is Ms. Rush. At the AAC meeting, there was a question about the public participating, and Doris, I asked Doris to remind me because I have forgotten. She said she had to do more research. I haven't heard her on the line, but to give us an update about her research. But we're talking about it now, and I guess if she had done her research, she could have emailed or said something now, so I just wanted to make sure that she had that opportunity. Thank you.
Ms. Resch, and actually Doris is not connected today on the meeting. Pat, go ahead.
One thing I was going to say is that I'm, if it looks like it's public participation, certainly the award nominees have kind of been a mixture of people that have, you know, been members of the committee, but certainly members of the public who have in the past contributed a lot to the to what we have had that really haven't even been on the board. One name that comes to mind, or on a committee or anything like that, or so much even associated with WMATA, one name that I remember is Bobby Coward. And he has, and certainly I know that we have, I believe Robbie Worth at one point also received the head of
Robbie Worth.
Right.
And, yes.
And so, yes. Right. So certainly the award criteria is there. And many times in the past, particularly we have members of the committee for their service have been awarded it. But certainly members of the public who have contributed to the accessibility of the system and had a major impact on that have been awarded that too. So I wasn't at the last meeting, so I'm not quite sure what the question was, but I think that certainly there's a broad brush that allows for all kinds of participation in who gets nominated. Thanks.
So this is Sandy. My understanding, what Doris was trying to say last time, was that members of the public could nominate someone for the head of the
Yes,
that's what
I'm saying. Oh, yeah. And I don't remember, with them not being on the committee, I don't see how they could nominate. Or if they have, they may have. I'm not saying they haven't, but I don't remember it. Pat, do you?
I believe that we have taken nominations in the past from the public, and certainly I knew we can check into that. We certainly have enough time between now and when nominations close to check into that. I do remember that as far as the voting is concerned, that that was not done by the public. So I think we accept nominations from individuals who think that someone is worthy. The voting, though, is not done by the public. And so I think we would certainly want to stress that.
This is a new path, and thank you for asking the question. I have gone back and researched for the last 5 to 6 years, and I have not found any information on nominations from the public, but I can surely look back further.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, and that might be something that's kind of interesting, Anu. I don't believe that it was restricted by just members of the committee, AAC, just generating who they think is award worthy. I don't know, but I think that's something we can check into. But I definitely know that as far as making the selection for the award, that members of the committee do make that selection as far as voting. In other words, no public participation in the award selection.
Okay, thank you for the point of clarification. And
can I add something just to...
Mr. Blake, go ahead.
Right, because what I was going to say, and I think Pat, Mr. Chairman, kind of alluded to it. Hey, if somebody in the audience or somebody in the public knows of someone or wants to recommend someone, I think they can suggest to a member or members, and then perhaps a member can nominate within the official context of a meeting. And then, as Pat say, only members vote. But I think we want to be careful when we say the public is nominating, because the nomination is a motion, and we want to keep it within those guidelines. So if somebody from the public or a friend of yours says, hey, I believe so-and-so should be considered for your award that you give out every year, I think we that's fine. However, and then that member decides to come to the committee and make that nomination, or, you know, then that's fine. But I don't know if we want to get into a point where we're at a meeting and the public, if you will, are making nominations when they're officially not, you know, sworn in members of the committee. So if we could just, we respect your colleagues and your community, and I know you each respect members of your community, but I think just for the sake of no drama and no issues, let's not say recommendations from the public are in fact nominations. Just for thought.
Thank you. That's a good point of clarification. Pat, did you have any more comments? I see your hand up. Or is that from before? Okay, that might be from before. Okay, so if anyone else from the committee has any more questions or comments about this topic, if not, we can move on to the public comment sections.
So let's move on to the public comment section if we have any public
Rico's. Comments.
Rico has a question here. Go ahead, Rico.
Okay. I want to thank Anu and Mr. Blake for what happened to yesterday. Let me familiar with the committee on what happened yesterday. I was on the X2 at 117 Leland Giant, Northeast. And a bus driver, I have a grocery for the food. I said, can you please let down the lift, please. He said, you act like the old ass lady. Now, I was angry and mad when he said that. And I emailed two people to make sure that this kind of behavior can never happen on the Ramada bus service. Don't care what person you are, an operator should never do that. And I had to let the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Rico, for sharing your experience. And as we already talked about it, that's under review as we speak. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. It's not acceptable. All right. If any members of the public have any questions or comments, please let us know now. Okay. Madam Chair Nozell, I do not see any hands up from the members of the public.
Okay. I have a question people applying to become members of the AAC, that application process closed, I believe, June 21st. Can you share with us the number of applicants and where it stands in a process of review with the board to nominate somebody to join the AAC since one position is open?
Sure, we'd be happy to do that. We received one application. Let me go back. The vacancy is for Northern Virginia. We did receive one application. The candidate is currently not a Northern Virginia resident. However, stated that they would be moving to Arlington end of July or August. They are a resident of the required jurisdiction. We are not able to process that application further. However, and just to share this with the entire committee, I had touched base with Patrick Sheehan today, being the AAC chair, and we may be reopening the application process. We wanted to have the position filled and approved by the board in at their board of directors meeting in July. That does not seem to be happening. And as I had mentioned, if you may recall, that was an ambitious goal, but we will be reopening the application process, hoping to receive more applications. And the candidate who had applied has been advised to inform us when they have moved for us to be able to consider their application for Northern Virginia.
Okay, thank you. And I think Doris Ray had mentioned she was going to seek some candidates. So maybe I should remind her, Pat should remind her, or you should remind her that's possible. Are you going to be informing the whole AAC? Yeah. Go ahead, Pat.
I'm sorry, Sandy. I didn't mean to step on you. I was going to say, I think Anu can certainly put that in writing out so we can get more candidates. But I can let Doris know also that she's got additional time. She wants to encourage nominations from her area. That would be fine.
Okay, thank you, Pat. And it does seem appropriate that Anu let everybody on the AAC know that there's a position open and there's restarting the process, since only, I think, about half of the members are on the meeting today. So if you could do that, Anu, that would be great.
Sandy, I was planning on sending an email and to the entire AAC, sharing that the app is going to be reopened. It does not meet in August, and that's the reason the AAC does not have any meetings in August. The next would be in September after July. That would be the earliest we can anticipate getting appointment for the new member.
Okay. All right. Any other comments, discussion from anybody else? I think there's nothing on the agenda, but we have a few minutes. We could discuss other topics they want to speak up about.
This is Sheehan just raised his hand. Pat, go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. Thank you, Sandy. This is just since Anu said we have the month off of August, thought I'd give us a little bit of an assignment. Paul Summerford and I will be co-chairing the bylaws committee. We are going to be convening. I'm hoping we're going to be convening, let's say, on the Wednesday evenings for a couple hours between now and the end of August, going through the bylaws. Paul has done this in the past, and he's done a great job just going through the different provisions of the bylaws. What I would like to do is to, I think we've got about four or five of us that are interested in looking what we have. I've read them. I think the Word version that I have was pretty straightforward. I think the bylaws are in pretty, my own thinking, I could be wrong. The bylaws, I think, are in pretty good shape, but there are some areas that we need to update them, particularly in the area of meetings, since we're now at least virtual and we could be hybrid, but we don't have that in the bylaws and a few things like that. So my plan is to meet for a bit in July, and Paul will be putting something out on the list, and then we'll be meeting in August and hopefully have a draft ready for the AAC in September at the September meeting. And then once we are happy with where we are, with this, we will then submit it to the board for their review. And in the past, it has gone to legal, but I think that we should be in pretty good shape since this was already reviewed back in 2015. So we're a little bit out of date, or 2015, I think it was, yeah. We're a little bit out of date. I think we should have reviewed it 3 years ago. But since we had the pandemic and all, we'll give ourselves a little bit of grace. But I appreciate those that have volunteered to help on this, and we'll just move forward with updates. So I appreciate it. Thanks. I just want to make that announcement.
Thank you, Patrick. And this is Sandy. And I'm really pleased to hear that you and Paul Semaphore will chair it and send out a note to let people join in on the Wednesday evening participation. And I also have read through the bylaws, and I feel they are in pretty good shape, just a little bit of polishing. And I think it should not be a painful process. It should go fairly smoothly, I think.
Well, yeah, I know. Okay. I've seen that before. Thank you, Sandy. Appreciate it. Yeah, I agree. We'll put a good group together, and we'll have some fun.
Okay. Anybody else? Because we still have a couple minutes, I think.
This is Janice Samuel, member of the public, just raised her hand. Janice.
Thank you, Anu. So what I'm hearing is there's no AAC meeting in August. They'll reconvene in September. Will there be a bus and rail and a metro access meeting in August?
This is no. So AAC and the subcommittee meetings do not meet in the month of August. And then we will reconvene in September.
And the reason for that generally is the board doesn't meet in August, so we don't have anything to report to the board.
Gotcha.
Because they don't meet either. So we sort of follow their lead.
Thank you.
Mr. Blake, are we going to have an August surprise?
Not this year, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe there's nothing we can we can surprise you with this year. But you never know.
Okay. All right, sir. But I do want to wish everybody here a good July and August. And appreciate everyone's.
Now, what would our whole gear be without the September surprise?
August, September surprise, and we'll see. As you said, no promises. Something to look forward to, Denise.
Well,
if there is one, Denise, I'm sure you'll be the first to know.
Well, Mr. Blake is a businessman.
Glad he's on our side.
Yes, indeed. I'm on your side.
I'm just watching him with both my blind eyes.
Any other topics or thoughts, you all?
No hands up at this point.
Okay. All right, well then, I'm going to take the liberty of saying maybe we can ask Anu to give us her spiel, and then we'll close the meeting.
Sure.
Is that the correct order to do it?
We're happy to do that, yes. Just to share that any members of the public, if you'd like to make comments or submit your public comments, you can do so via email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you. That concludes my announcement.
Actually, I thought of one more thing. Is there any feedback from Lynn Bowersox about when the next soft mock-up of the 8000 series cars might happen?
Not at this point. Lynn Bowersox had mentioned something at the last meeting when she presented, not at this point.
Okay. All right. So then I'm going to call for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
A motion to adjourn, Farmer.
Any second?
Second.
All right. Now, everybody in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Everybody have a great week until the Metro Access meeting next Monday, and we'll see you then.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a nice day.